This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome to Resource Center. My name is Majida Hashim. Talent management has caught the interest of many organizations lately. However, the way talent management is practiced by organizations seems to differ considerably. This begets the question, what is talent management all about? Is it another fad that will come and go? Is it right to say that talent management is just actually training and development given a more decorated, a more glamorous title? What differentiates between good and weak talent management practices? And are there successful stories of good talent management practices among Malaysian companies? To answer these questions and more, we welcome back to the studio Dr. Rosan Othman from Human Capital. He is an author, management consultant and trainer with over 30 years of experience in management research. Dr. Rosan, why is there this sudden interest in talent management? Is it really something new?
Okay. Thank you, Majida. Basically, the term talent management came out of the book that was written by three McKinsey consultants. Mm-hmm. The book, War for Talents. Basically, what they were addressing was trying to understand why companies were having performance problems. And one of the causes that they identified as contributing to poor performance has been the lack of capable leaders who can lead at the strategic level. And they find that many organizations do not even have a clear succession plan. Mm. They do not have a clear understanding of how to, for instance, enhance the capability of their operational leaders to become strategic leaders. Now, because of that, they recognize that success, long-term success at the strategic level will depend on to what extent companies can engage in this war to either get the best talents or develop internal talent so that they can lead at the strategic level. Now, another issue that is also related to that is the phenomenon what is called leadership deficit. Okay, leadership deficit is when you either face a shortage of people who can lead at the right level, or people who are internally, when they are promoted to higher level position, just cannot adapt to that strategic role.
Hmm.
For instance, research that I did on the level of this problem amongst Malaysian companies, we found that 77% of the respondents reported that they have this leadership deficit, the problem of leadership deficit, in the sense that they are having a shortage of getting enough people who are capable of leading at the strategic level.
Wow.
And 68% basically say that those who are promoted do not rise to the expectation of strategic leadership responsibilities.
Mm.
So this is a serious problem, and this is a very recent data that is based on the research that we did locally.
Mm.
But having said that, developing talent is not something new.
Hmm.
The jargon is probably relatively new because of the widespread popularity of the book, The War for Talent. But many organizations have long been recognized for doing a very good job as far as developing their people in terms of developing their talent, their leadership. Strategic leadership capabilities. So if you're talking about American companies, some of the leaders in this would include General Electric, Procter & Gamble, IBM would be mm-hmm. some of those companies that have done it. Locally, I would say Petronas would stand out as among the leaders as far as developing leadership talent over the long term. They've been doing it even before the term talent management came into the scene.
Mm.
And again, just like other management fads, more and more companies are getting on the talent management bandwagon, though I noticed not everyone understands what talent management is all about, and they are sometimes just doing the same old thing, but giving it a new label.
Mm. So can you tell us what is talent management and how is it different from training or human resource development and other HR terms?
Okay. Typically, when you're talking about talent management, it is specific to preparing people to lead at the senior level position. And we're talking about GM, mm-hmm. Vice President, the C-suite position, the CEO, CFO, CTO, and all the various chiefs in organizations. So some of our local companies define these positions as either key leadership positions or pivotal positions. So what they would usually do, they will identify these positions that need to be filled in by really strategic thinkers and designate these positions as a key leadership position or pivotal position and groom people to actually for this position. And typically, this would involve, for most organizations, the creation of a talent pool. Mm. These are usually high-performance, high-potential individuals who are selected into this pool, who are then given specialized training to prepare them for senior leadership positions. The practice among Malaysian companies is mixed. Some prefer to use the talent pool. Some tend to treat everyone in the organization as a potential future leader. Mm. So this is what I call the talent C approach, where they basically do not use a designated group of high potential managers for purposes of talent development. The other important thing about talent management is that companies that have done it pretty well, and we can say to be very serious about this, you will see a lot of involvement by members of top management. For instance, among some of our local companies, even the board members will actually become involved in the talent development activities. In some cases, it can be through leadership dialogues. In some cases, even assigning members of the talent pool to the CEO's office to do special projects, to give them exposure as well as broaden their experience. So the typical training would be much more concerned with operational skills, whereas talent management is much more concerned with about the long-term development of the leader to become a strategic leader. So the focus is on strategic leadership competencies.
It's almost like mentoring, personally mentoring the next leadership
player. Yes, it is one of the mechanisms that would usually be used for developing leaders. Mm-hmm. And I think in the case of Malaysia, it is also partly stimulated by Khazanah's GLC transformation plan. Mm. Because one of the seven areas of the transformation plan is to develop that talent pipeline of future leaders for the GLC. So you will see that many of the organizations that I've studied, our local companies, basically attribute their initiative as partly being stimulated by that GLC transformation plan that was put out by Khazanah.
I've been speaking to Dr. Wilson Othman from Human Capital about the talent management bandwagon. We're going to take a...
Bigotry-free Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Resource Centre. My name is Majidah Hashim and in the studio with me is Dr. Rosan Othman from Human Capital, and today we're talking about the talent management bandwagon. What are the differentiating characteristics of good talent management practice?
Okay. Before I answer that question, I have to qualify by explaining that as far as research is concerned, there is very limited research in terms of trying to understand what differentiates successful or good talent management practice compared with the less successful ones. Mm. I had the opportunity to work with one of my students when I was in academia on this matter amongst Malaysian company, and we managed to identify a number of characteristics of successful talent management programs. One is the recognition that talent management is basically a long-term initiative. Mm. It's not about few days of training and then you expect everybody to become strategic leader. It doesn't work that way. So companies that are more successful have that long-term approach. They make the commitment to basically put people within the program for a protected period. So for some of these programs that I know and I was and still am personally involved, it also includes enrolling these students in MBA programs as part of their development. Hmm. So the MBA program itself will take about 1.5 to 2 years, and after that, there are other development programs that they have to go through. So it's a very long-term thing. And mentoring also comes in, coaching also comes in as part of the learning experience. The other thing that we did in the study was we compared the effectiveness between those companies that use talent pools mm-hmm. and those that use the talency approach. Mm. And we found that companies that use the talent pool approach tend to be more effective as far as being able to produce people who can advance to senior leadership position and being more satisfied with the performance of these leaders once they are promoted.
Is it because they are more focused and targeted?
Yes, that's true. They are more focused, whereas when you're using the talency, the number of people involved can be very massive. Mm. One of the organizations that I studied way back in 2009 was Malaysia Airlines at that time, and they had started their talent management program, then I think it was already about 2 years. But because they followed the talency approach, after 2 years, they still have not even been able to finish the training for all their managers yet because the number was so big. Okay? Mm. Whereas some companies limit the number to sometimes even less than 100 or some maybe slightly more than 100. So one organization that I'm involved right now, I think their talent pool is only about 60 people. And okay. this is a company of about 11,000 employees. Mm. The other thing that we also saw was developing talent, developing leaders has to go beyond training. Okay? Because when you're talking about learning, I personally believe the best teachers are the leaders themselves. Mm. You know? And why, for instance, pardon my former colleagues in the universities, why universities are not always very effective in terms of leadership development is that not all academicians are themselves leaders mm. or have the leadership experience. So suddenly they're teaching leadership, so they basically rely a lot more on the textbook material.
It's very academic.
Yeah, it becomes very academic.
Yeah.
And what is missing usually is the ability to share insights. Mm. Okay. And that's where, to support a successful talent management program, there have to be that culture of dialogue and engagement by the top management team with members of the talent pool especially. The other important characteristic that we also saw was that some companies, or many companies that actually implemented the talent management program also had their leadership competency model. Hmm. To define clearly what are the competency sets that the talent pool members need to develop. But there are also companies that do not do that. So because of that, their training program is less focused. And we found that those who have a leadership competency model were more effective, more successful than those who did not use the leadership competency model. Hmm. Now, amongst those who had used the leadership competency model, we found that those who develop their own internal leadership competency model tend to be more successful than those who rely on generic leadership competency model. For example, if you're looking around among Malaysian companies, there are some companies that rely on a certain leadership competency model that is developed by a certain consulting firm. Mm. So that competency model is the same, regardless of which client.
Yeah.
So they use the same model. So I've seen the companies that are in the energy sector using that competency model, in the financial services using that competency model, in telecommunication using that. It's not customized according to the strategic requirement of the organization. Mm. They tend to be less effective compared to those who develop their own leadership competency model internally to reflect their own strategic emphasis and requirement.
You mentioned about this leadership competency model and how important it is in talent development. Does this mean that all managers should have the same leadership qualities, and is it even possible to have them all competent at the same time?
Okay, that's a good question, because this has been a controversy within amongst the management researchers, whether it is even a sound idea to try to develop everybody to become the same leader, you know. And I think one interesting discussion on this was an analysis that was given by Professor David Day from Western Australia, where he said part of the failure that organizations make is the failure to distinguish between leader development and leadership development.
Mm.
Okay. Now, what was the difference? Leader development is about the qualities of the individual. Okay. Why? Because you're talking about the person developing their self-awareness, personal effectiveness, their own personal motivation. So this is about developing the person. This has to be customized, because no group of individuals is ever the same. Okay. So we have different level of motivation, different level of drive, for instance, different style of behaving. And therefore, there has to be that flexibility in actually addressing the personal learning needs. So this is what he called as actually leader development. So leader development has to be differentiated. You have to take into consideration how people differ. And he makes a distinction that leadership development, on the other hand, is a bit different. Leadership development is more related to the relationship, networking, and the exercise of leadership within a setting, and specifically within the organization.
The practice of leadership itself.
So you have to be able to develop the leadership capabilities within the context that you're operating, within the context of the strategic challenges that you're dealing with. So in this case, the leadership competency model becomes very important, because, for instance, a service organization will require different competencies compared to, let's say, a manufacturing organization. If you're working, let's say, in Disney, very knowledge intensive, depends a lot on creativity, as compared to you are working in a factory assembling components, then the competency model will be very different because of the setting is very different. So he makes that distinction that when you're talking about leader development, it has to be differentiated. But when you're talking about leadership development, it has to be integrated based on a leadership competency model. So going back to your question, whether it's even realistic or viable to expect everybody to be the same, the answer is yes and no. In the sense that if you are able to address this variation between individuals at the leader development and take the integrating approach in the leadership development, then you'll be able to balance these two forces that appear to be pulling in different direction.
In the studio with me today is Dr. Roshan Othman from Human Capital, and we are talking about the talent management bandwagon. We're going to take another short break right now. Stay tuned right here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bloggers for Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Resource Centre. My name is Majidah Hashim, and today I'm speaking to Dr. Roshan Othman from Human Capital about the talent management bandwagon. What is unique about developing strategic leadership competencies?
Okay. Strategic leadership competency, you see, if you're going to a very basic leadership training, let's say on supervisory skills, that is the most basic leadership training. You will see that a lot of the topic, a lot of the training material tend to be highly proceduralized. Okay, 5 steps to delegation, 6 steps to give feedback, or the 1-minute feedback.
Yeah.
You follow the 1-minute manager prescriptions. Okay, so they tend to be very prescriptive, very proceduralized.
Step by step.
Step by step. You know, you're supposed to be able to come back, or in your mind, there are 4 steps to do this, 6 steps to do that. That's the typical way operational training is done. At the strategic leadership level, it's a bit different, because strategic leadership responsibility has a lot more ambiguity. Quite often, when you face a strategic challenge, it is because it is a problem you've never encountered before. That's why it becomes a challenge.
Mm.
If it is something that is routine, then it's not a strategic issue.
Because we know how to solve that.
Yeah,
already.
We know how to solve that. You already have SOPs, you have user guides and manuals and all that.
And we're prepared
you
for
have
that.
Precedence. Yeah, you already programmed for that kind of decision. But strategic challenges are usually novel.
Mm.
They are unique. And quite often, you cannot rely on the past to define how you should act.
Mm.
And that's why developing leadership competencies is really about developing a sense of judgment, stretching your imagination to be able to get you to think outside the box. That's how leaders respond to strategic challenges. So you move away from routinization to creativity and a lot more use of imagination as compared to when you're training people for operational leadership. The other important element in uniqueness of strategic leadership competency is that it also involves a shift in mental horizon, thinking more about the long-term perspective. And you have to have the ability to develop a bird's eye view.
Hmm.
Now, most of us, when we start our career, we're working at the operational level.
Yeah.
So our world is very small, very defined. We develop, it becomes a habit. That habit tend to also create a certain mind frame over a long period of time.
Yeah.
And sometimes when people go to senior level position, they cannot get out of that mental habit.
Because they are too structured.
They are too structured. They're always looking at the trees rather than the forest.
Mm.
Okay. So changing that mindset is always one of the basic challenges in strategic leadership competency, getting people to see the big picture. Equally important, of course, in strategic leadership is developing relationship and networking. As I said just now, leadership development is about how you work within the context that you are in. That relationship and networking is very important because when you're making strategic decision, you cannot make a decision based on just your functional area.
Hmm.
It has to be something that transcends functional boundaries and look at the whole organization. And finally, it tends to use a much richer methodology. And three key elements that has to be there in the design of strategic leadership programs. One is what we call deliberate practice. Deliberate practice is the opportunity to try something, make mistakes, learn from the mistake, and try again.
Hmm.
And studies about adult education have shown that people who practice things that they are not familiar with tend to progress faster than people who just like to do the same thing again and again and again.
Oh, I see.
So when you're designing strategic leadership program, you have to take people out of the familiar, out of their comfort zone, mm-hmm. expose to something different. And this is related to the second element, is what we call experience density.
Hmm.
You create challenges, you create stress, to stimulate people to actually use their creativity to think beyond the obvious. Why? Because our natural instinct is to rely on the familiar. We make decisions, solve problems based on established rules and procedures. But when you are presented with novel problems, you are more likely to find that those rules and procedures don't always work.
Hmm.
So that's why you will find that creating that experience density becomes very important. And the third element that is also very important is reflective thinking, because you have to understand your own limitations.
Mm.
Part of your ability to actually overcome your past habits is by understanding your own limitation. And this can only happen when you reflect on the learning experience, you what we call intellectualize difficulty. You know, when you're doing difficult assignments, sometimes you fail.
Mm.
One possible response, you get emotional about it, you give up, or you become disappointed. So that's where mentoring comes in, to guide people to the process of facing these challenges. So you grow not so much just by knowledge, but by actually immersing yourself with new challenges, new experiences that stretch your capabilities.
Is there an implication on the differences between operational and strategic leadership on the methods used in developing these competencies?
Yeah, very obvious. You will see that in consulting, we call this as being about expanding the headroom.
Hmm.
Okay. We need people who, for the lack of better term, I would prefer to use the whole notion of developing wisdom.
Hmm.
Rather than just giving knowledge, okay? You will see that in operational leadership, the skills that you learn is very much tied to the technology that you use.
Hmm.
If you use a certain machine on your production line, then the skills that you use is very much defined by that technology. But at the strategic level, you're not using machines in that way. You're using machines to help you make decision. You make to perform analysis. So at the end of the day, it is actually developing the wisdom to make sense out of information rather than the use of raw data and information.
Can talent management initiatives fail? And what can companies do to avoid this?
Okay. Indeed, there are some incidences and stories of failure. One of the problems that is well documented in the research on talent management is the example of Tyson Food in the US. And one of the they initiated this talent management program, but after I think about a year or so, it basically fumbled. And part of the reason was they basically decided that they wanted to do what Procter & Gamble was doing, imitated everything Procter & Gamble was doing. And as a result, it backfired because it didn't reflect their own internal requirements. People were not on board. People were not committed. Now, this is a food company as compared to a consumer, fast-moving consumer product company like Procter & Gamble.
Yeah, this was what we spoke about in our last episode about management fads.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. Mm. So the way they went about with developing their talent management program was in a kind of a faddish adoption.
Yeah.
Okay. So because of that, they failed and had to basically revamp the whole approach. Going back to square one to design the talent management program. The second cause of failure of talent management program, as I mentioned earlier, you need to create that culture of dialogue and engagement. I know of one organization that is doing basically the opposite. You know, when managers question about some issues, some outstanding issue in the company, what they experience is kind of a backlash, you know. So there is a strong sense of hierarchy within the organization that you are a junior, you should not be questioning and this and that. So because of that, people do not feel that flow. So that sharing of insight, that sense of togetherness, that we're in this together, that this is our problem, is not there because people feel that if they speak out, they will be punished. So there is no sense of safety.
Yeah.
And as a result, when you treat people like that, they're not going to become leaders, you know?
Yeah.
They're going to become more like cage birds.
Yeah.
Okay? You know, the problem with cage birds, even when you open the cage, sometimes they don't fly away.
Out. Yeah.
So this is what I call cage bird phenomena. Mm. And that happens because of some of these issues related to hierarchical orientation. The other thing that I noticed has contributed to the limited success of some of the talent management programs here is what I call the sense of unfairness. Now, what happens is when you are a member of the talent pool, you are usually told that, you know, you are going through this program, you are chosen because we would like you to become the candidates for future leadership. But on more than one occasion, I've heard of people complaining, members of the talent pool complaining, yeah, we go through all this, do all the extra effort, go through the extra training, and then suddenly we see a guy who's not in the talent pool gets promoted over us. So because of that, there's a lot of complaints, sometimes bitterness. And that sense of injustice actually undermines the whole talent management program. And this can only be overcome by getting top management to be really committed about supporting the talent management program. The other thing is also the failure to manage stress. Because most talent management program will require all these participants, talent pool members, to go to all the extra training and along with that also extra assignments.
Yeah.
So it can be very stressful because they have their primary responsibility in their work. They have all of these additional things that they also have to do. It can really stress. And, you know, I've seen people complaining that they just can't stand it. Some people say, I'd rather leave this group and go back to my normal self. Even if I don't get promoted, it's okay. At least I live happily.
There's a pressure to perform
To perform. So these are some of the things that you have to manage. And then some of the things that can also become a problem is what I call the hoarding phenomena by leaders, where when they know someone has high performance, high potential, instead of allowing them to go to the talent pool program, they basically prevent them from going to the talent pool program because they want to have these guys under them forever to do all the job and everything. So this guy, the leader, gets all the benefit, but he himself doesn't grow. And that relates to the another issue relating to talent management is poor what I would call management of the processes.
Hmm.
For instance, many programs will require job rotation. Okay. Yet sometimes when someone is sent from one position to another position to do that, the receiving entity, unit or department is not always prepared to give the assignments to receive the person. The person may come for the first few days is just wondering what is going to be his job.
Yeah.
So some of these finer details are not, when they're not properly managed, that's when it can actually also backfire.
Hmm. Thank you, Dr. Rosan, for speaking to me today. I've been speaking to Dr. Rosan Othman from Human Capital about the talent management bandwagon. If you've missed any part of this interview, you can find it podcastified on the BFM app, available right now on the App Store and on Google Play. My name is Majidah Hashim for Resource Centre, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.